You hear over the next few minutes some reflections from former gatherers as we celebrate this 15th anniversary of the former gathering, founded 15 years ago this coming June 22nd. And two members who will speak to us about some of their thoughts and memories of the gathering and also what inspires them and the values that are still here as part of this congregation are Kim Roots and Bob Freer. Kim, if you'll come forward.
In thinking of the gathering, I kind of want to make this a personal journey, but I think many of you will share many of the memories and emotions. I joined Mount Auburn Presbyterian Church in the year 2000 after being inactive in any kind of church or religion for about 30 years. I figured churches weren't gay-friendly, and so I didn't need them. Then I heard Pastor Steve Van Kuyken, the new pastor at Mount Auburn, and Hal Porter, the retiring pastor, and they spoke of progressive politics and the need to be totally inclusive of LG, all that, gay and lesbian inclusion. So I started becoming politically involved as well, which I hadn't been for since college days. And we went to various Presbyterian seminars and discussions, and we were trying to change the, I think it was called the Book of Order, and which said you cannot be a leader or a pastor if you are gay. And, well, we weren't very successful in changing that. And in fact, Pastor Steve Van Kuyken believed in performing marriages, and he insisted on calling them marriages, not commitment ceremonies. He said, hey, they're just the same as a heterosexual marriage. And so after performing several marriages and after many warnings from the Presbyterian Church, they decided to put him on trial and defrocked him and excommunicated him, or whatever the words the Presbyterians used. And some of the members of the church stood up and spoke against Steve, and so myself and I think many others felt betrayed, and we started the gathering. And we felt that Steve Van Kuyken was a leader willing to put his career and livelihood on the line, and that we should support him. So Steve was our first pastor of the gathering. And one of the first things he did was to marry my previous partner, Ken, and I. Since we couldn't use the Presbyterian Church anymore, we got married at St. John's UU. And, of course, at that time, the marriage wasn't recognized by the government. The Cincinnati Inquirer covered our wedding as part of the story of the Mount Auburn gathering breakup. One humorous note, I was the first treasurer and also worked on filing the 401c3 papers to get tax-exempt status for the gathering. And first we found that the gathering had already been registered as a name. So I think this was Steve's idea. It wasn't mine, but we were the gathering all in God and God in all. Then, you know, I'm a mathematician by training or accountant, and not particularly good at my writing skills, and I left the H out. So officially, we were the Gatorine, all in God and God in all. But fortunately, the church itself was a great place, and I learned that it wasn't just a one-issue church. What was important to me was our commitment to social justice and the rights of all people, and our work in the community. Pete and Jenny's work with homeless youth, and working with homeless families with Interfaith IHN. And those were very important to me as a gay man without children, and you know, I found it very easy to be very self-centered and constantly thinking about what my next trip was going to be and what my next entertainment was going to be. And I just found the value of a spiritual community was reaching out and beyond myself and helping others. And that was the most important thing for me at the gathering, and the most important thing when we merged with Northern Hills and became the gathering at Northern Hills. It was, again, the commitment to others, to social justice, that makes me want to come every day and every Sunday and continue the work here at the gathering at Northern Hills. I was also able to marry the love of my life, Barry, here at the gathering at Northern Hills. And this time it was recognized by the state of Ohio as well. So I just want to say thank you, all of you, for being my loving, caring, and supportive family. And I congratulate our 15 years of standing on the side of love.
Kim is quite modest. He was really one of the mainstays in the one of the very crucial people in the running of the gathering. And, of course, he and Barry continue that work here at the gathering in Northern Hills. The next gentleman I want to invite up here is Bob Freer. He began at the gathering soon after I became minister, and he has just a few comments, or some comments about... okay. Well, come on up, Bob.
You're probably wondering why I'm wearing this T-shirt. Well, I want to say it's my way of expressing that the gathering is gone but not forgotten. Well, I want to tell a little story about my first day at the gathering. I had read an article in the newspaper about this fledgling congregation that had started as a result of the breakaway that Kim talked about. And I went down there, and I walked in the front door, and who should greet me but Patty Weirs. And she spoke about five words, and I said, where are you from in Minnesota? And she said, Alexandria. I said, you know where Osakis is, don't you? And she said, of course, it's 14 miles south of Alexandria. Well, I used to spend my summers on a family farm at Osakis while she was living in Alexandria. So we formed a bond that has lasted to this day. And the rest is history, as they might say. Bye-bye.
One of the things I particularly loved about the gathering was we really only had one standing committee, and that was our board. And other things, people would just come up with ideas and just go and do them, and everybody was fine with that. And Bob was one of those people who had just had all kinds of ideas, and he would just go and do them. And he was one of our major fundraisers for the gathering. He initiated our rummage sales, which substantially helped our budget, and a person who just went and did things, and that pretty much was the ethic of the gathering. Right now, I want to move into a break between our reflections and move into... On behalf of the Gathering Northern Hills, thank you for the offerings. We have some more reflections on the former gathering, and again from members there. And I want to invite Jack Brennan up here to speak. He was one of the founding members of the former gathering.
Morning, everybody. Well, Valerie and I were both raised Catholic, and when we got to be about 40 or so, we were done with being Catholic. And we lived out in the Eastgate area at the time, and we actually went, I was attracted to go to Heritage UU, which wasn't too far from us. But at that point, Valerie still was not ready to make the leap away from a Christian church. It's been her whole upbringing. So I knew of Mount Auburn Presbyterian. I knew the congregation was known for being about one-third to one-half of gay people, and I thought, well, that's a progressive place. That might be a good place to go. So we went there, and we're very happy there for many years. Kim has already kind of run over what happened there with Pastor Steve Van Kuyken. But what I'm reminded of is that the gathering was a church of great spirit to me. Not spiritual, but spirit. And I think a lot of that came from Steve Van Kuyken, the pastor who, when he was getting ready to battle the Presbyterian Church on the marriage equality issue, he asked people if we were ready to go play in the street. And of course, he was the one that showed more courage than anyone and was defrocked. And then we started meeting those of us who decided it was time for us to leave the Presbyterians. We met in people's homes, which was and we felt like we had built something. The gathering was the first church we were ever in that was totally affirming of the inclusion of LGBT people. So that was eye-opening to us and made us all feel good. Doug took over when Steve left in the same spirit. The gathering was the first place I ever heard about the abolitionist John Brown, who Betsy and I have talked about him and discussed him a lot, but he remains one of my has become one of my inspirational heroes. Steve Van Kuyken, I guess he had moved on to become the gathering pastor, but I thought this was a little ironic because he was a Presbyterian pastor, but he was the first or the most significant people in making me realize that a personal afterlife was not a guaranteed thing. He put in my mind the idea that there might not be a personal afterlife in heaven, which sticks with me. I remember one year I missed Sundays during the fall because I was working for the Bengals and wasn't around much in the fall. And I just remember how great it felt to come back to a Christmas Eve service and be with those people and saying to them that I just felt so fortunate that most people did not have 40, 50 people in their lives who they really could consider dear friends that you knew would help you in any way through thick and thin. And I know that spirit is here also. I just don't know everybody here quite as well yet as I knew everyone at the gathering, but I look forward to continuing that process, and I'm happy that the gathering brought me here to the gathering at Northern Hills today.
Thank you, Jack. This podium that I speak from was the one used at the former gathering, and it came from the church that the gathering first started assembling at, Old St. George in Clifton. And when the gathering decided to move over the Rhine, they said, sure, you can take that with us. So here it remains here today, and as you know, we use this from time to time, and I obviously thought it would be good to use today. The next speaker is Sue Klein, and Sue was, again, a stalwart of the former gathering, a founding member, and I think it was about a year, 2 years before we merged, and we weren't even knowing that the merger was going to happen at that time. I kind of went to Sue and I said, we need a new board president. And I said, Sue kind of, oh, that's just not kind of me, and I'm not kind of a committee person, and I just don't know about that. And I said, oh, please, Sue, it's not going to be a whole lot of work. And it's just really only a 1 year term, and no big deal. And Sue said, okay, I'll do it. Well, Sue ended up doing that for the next 2 years while we were going through the whole merger process and merger exploration process, and Sue expertly managed that. And then once we came together, we decided, oh, we need to keep the board president from the gathering and the board president from the former Northern Hills Fellowship. So Sue then had to do another 2 years as co-president. So poor Sue ended up doing quite a spell as president. So she will now offer some of her own reflections about the former gathering. And of course, we all appreciate you, Sue.
The first part of my reflection is to tell you that Doug cannot always be trusted. Especially if he's pouring red wine for you. So, and these other reflections have brought me many memories that I'd like to comment on, but I could blather on all morning, so I'm going to read what I prepared. We were a ragtag group and also a determined one. Institutional Christian religion, even one with fabulous music, which we had at Mount Auburn, had done a number on our pastor, his values, his integrity, not to mention his career. We took our collective values of truth, honesty, integrity, skepticism, and compassion for one another, and we bolted. We could no longer live with dishonesty, hypocrisy, and deceit. That's not to say I don't struggle with these elements of myself, in myself, every day. Believe me. Somehow, we saw a longer, more honest, more compassionate view of religion and an honest way of being. After the curtain of initial deep hurt of betrayal began to open a bit, we knew we had a unique opportunity to continue to care for one another within a self-defined and self-made community. Together, we'd been reading and discussing books about the real Jesus, such as The Gospel of Paul by Elaine Pagels, books by Bishop John Spong, Jack Nelson Pallmeyer, Marcus Borg, all mixed in with a dose of Anne Lamott. We had many discussions about values, vision, what we stood for. We were Christians, agnostics, atheists, activists, introverts, gay, straight, singles and couples, parents, and not. Not unlike a UU congregation. The definition that has stuck with me for 15 years is, thank you, Brandon Weirs, that each of us is, quote, a facet of the divine. Divine being self-defined and realized. Hence our original name for our group, The Gathering, All in God and God in All. I didn't realize it was a legal thing. I thought we were expressing who we were. So we took our values and our vision and we moved to an as yet ungentrified but developing OTR, set up a storefront church, and set to work. We continued to care for one another, to know one another, and we opened our door to anyone who walked in, even a couple of folks who used us and stole from us. I remember being interviewed by City Beat when we began as a congregation, and I said, we're very welcoming. Even if W himself walked through the door, we would be gracious. I'm not sure I could do it today, but I'm really not. Anyway, we did. Everyone was welcome. We had people come in who broke out in gospel song in the middle of a service. We had people who took their moment for cares and or joys and concerns and preached to us. It was always an interesting mix of people, and we loved them all. And some people just showed up right after the service in time for snacks. But that was okay because that was lunch for them that day. And it was good to see them. Anyway, we expanded our caring, particularly to homeless and marginalized youth. Thank you, Pete and Ginny. And we did what we could as individuals and as a ragtag group to participate in the neighborhood and a bit beyond. We displayed art, and we held rummage sales. We continued to discuss, read books, and make decisions as a group. We didn't always agree, but we all worked together. People came and went. They were welcomed and missed. We loved, and it was a great place to be. Thank you.
As I've shared here before, I first attended the former gathering almost 11 years ago. And it had been, at that time when I first visited the gathering, it had been several years since I had come out. And I was, when I was asked to resign from the previous church for coming out, from my previous church I had served at. I had not attended any church until someone recommended the gathering to me as a place that was warm and supportive and accepting. And I very hesitantly decided to give it a try. And of course, within moments after walking in the door, I think probably what happened to every single new visitor that walked in that small storefront church and over the Rhine, I was, and I think almost every single visitor, was greeted by our ambassadress, Patty Weirs, who immediately came up and offered just a huge smile and a friendly welcome. And minutes later, I was greeted by several other members, and it was quickly apparent to me that the gathering was not only welcoming, it was, as I'd been told, a really warm and really friendly place towards literally everyone. And I can't tell you or fully describe for you the impact that had for me at the time, or the indelible memories I still have of that moment. My previous church had banished me and shunned me and told me I was going to hell. And churches had become for me, after that, seeming like places of hypocrisy, full of people that say they love others, but don't act like it. But I instantly knew the gathering was different. It made people, its members and total strangers, a priority. Being in Over the Rhine, as several of the other folks have just told you, the gathering was often visited by folks who some might call different. And I was perhaps one of those so-called different people. But to be greeted so warmly, to be immediately accepted and befriended, that meant the world to me. The world to me. At a time when I had felt judged and condemned. And I remember thinking, here is a group of people who try to practice what a church is supposed to be, a refuge, a place of peace, a community that welcomes and thereby loves anybody and everybody. And that ethic is from the gathering, I know it was at Northern Hills Fellowship, and it's still here today. But the gathering was always wonderfully loving, as I just said. And as Sue Klein just said, and Kim related, and Jack, it began as a place. It began as a place where people mattered far more than theology or religious doctrine. Hurting and wounded people were those particularly loved by the gathering. And that ideal remained a part of its DNA, and that DNA is in this very congregation today. Martin Luther King Jr. frequently used the term beloved church in his sermons and speeches. For him, a beloved church is one that shows agape love to all, even to enemies. And agape love is the kind of love that many define as sacrificial or unconditional. friend or stranger, rich or poor, gay or straight, black or white, good or bad, none of those matter when one shows agape love. And Dr. King suggested that the number one characteristic of an agape loving church is that it practice what he called, quote unquote, radical hospitality. And by practicing abundant hospitality, what sadly too many people and churches in the world fail to show, a beloved church, an agape beloved church, conveys, according to Dr. King, that it is like an inclusive, a totally inclusive family, instead of like an exclusive club. As I related, I felt such agape love when I first walked into the gathering, and I know many, many, many others had that same feeling. All kinds of people, as Sue was just saying, the homeless, the emotionally hurting, the slightly off, those who were drunk or even high on drugs, would regularly visit us on Sundays, usually wanting something to eat or just to get out of the cold or the heat. And the gathering not only never turned those people away, it showed them a version of King's radical hospitality. People would go up and welcome them. What can we give you? What can we do for you? And by its welcome and its non-judgmental attitude, the gathering told any visitor that they were loved. And many of those street visitors were smelly. Some, as Sue said, wanted to preach to us what they'd heard at other downtown churches. Quite a few were drug addicts. Many told us of their down-and-out stories and wanted help. And time after time after time, gathering members on their own reached into their pockets and handed out money. In many ways, I think many of the gathering members were outcasts in some way. Its founding minister, Steve Van Kuyk, and members who followed him were essentially thrown out of their previous church. They were outcasts. Others, like me, were wounded in some way by religion or poverty or coming out or drugs or alcohol or illness or having been rejected by family. As so-called outcasts, we found community with each other where we felt accepted and loved. I hesitate saying this, but we were a bit like the island of misfit toys. And even so, we wore that idea of being an outcast or perhaps a misfit or slightly different. We wore those things as badges of honor. The gathering didn't care about the pretense of appearing like a so-called normal church or having a so-called normal minister or a so-called normal building. For gathering members, those aspects about the church made it distinctive and perhaps in tune with the people who live in Over the Rhine, who are, in many cases, truly the outcasts here in our Cincinnati society. One member who exemplified that different spirit was a gentleman named Danny. And of course, those of us who are former gathering members remember Danny well. He was a slightly odd person who suffers, Keith and I still see him in Over the Rhine, he suffers from some kind of mental other-ableness. And he likely also suffers from Tourette's syndrome, since he would regularly burst out in the middle of a service while I'm trying to offer a very serious message. He'd often burst out with verbal exclamations. He'd talk to himself, or at some point, I didn't quite understand why, he'd shout a praise Jesus, or he'd just stand up and wander around the sanctuary, all in the middle of a service. And of course, he annoyed the heck out of many of us, and he particularly annoyed the heck out of me, since I'm trying to do this nice, serious service. But he was one of us. Danny was one of us. And while some churches would have made him feel unwelcome, the gathering didn't. The beloved nature of the gathering could not help itself. It literally, literally, literally welcomed everyone. And I think according to Dr. King's standard, it showed radical hospitality to others. And that kumbaya feeling of the gathering provided a real loving sense of community. But as Sue and Kim alluded, it wasn't just dedicated to loving itself, It wanted to love people beyond its walls. It was an outreach-oriented church that was committed to making a tangible difference in the lives of the poor and the homeless and the hungry. And as Sue said, the congregation voted to focus its volunteer efforts on serving children. And that was, as we decided, hopefully a way that we could break the endless cycle of generational poverty. For a congregation that had fewer than 50 members, the gathering members volunteered regularly for outreach work for 5 different organizations that we supported and volunteered at. And we would work at these places several times a month, as we still do here at the Gathering in Northern Hills. But that desire to put our words and our beliefs into action is still here in this congregation today. It's a fundamental ethic of this congregation, as it was for the Gathering. We care for our own. We create a sense of community in which members and visitors, hopefully, feel nurtured and safe. But most importantly, we bring the agape love that we feel in here, and then we take it out into the world to share it. To be a beloved church by Dr. King's standards is therefore not just about loving fellow members. It's about loving different people, especially the hurting and the hungry or the smelly or the anguished gay man or the fearful transsexual or the black kid whose playground is a litter-strewn downtown alley, who has no home, who sometimes must steal or get high just to cope. And it's easy on occasions like this to overly magnify the good in what or whom is being honored. And of course, the former gathering was definitely a loving church, but it was by no means perfect. No church is. But if I had to boil the gathering's essence down to just a sentence, it would be, as I said earlier, that it made people more important than things or beliefs. Its members truly liked and loved each other and supported each other. It was much like a once-a-week commune, a place of open acceptance and really just happiness and joy that we were together. It was radical in its hospitality and its unwavering commitment to serve the poor and homeless children. And as I said, the gathering merged well with the Northern Hills Fellowship, who had similar ideals as the gathering. And so I hope and trust, along with all of you, that those ideals of those two former congregations will continue and endure and be strengthened in our new congregation, the Gathering at Northern Hills, long, long, long into the future. And I wish you each much peace and joy.